He obtained his PhD in civil engineering at the University of Wyoming in 2017. His previous work focused on infiltration modeling in soils. In 2018, Guo Tao joined Sierra Nevada Research Institute at UC Merced as a postdoc, and he is working on mountain hydrology using basin-wide wireless sensor networks in Sierra. So, Guo Tao, welcome and take it away.
Okay, so you guys can see my screen now?
Yes, we can see it and we can hear you.
Okay, thank you for the introduction. So my topic today is about the rain snow transit elevation in the mountain basin areas. Basically, we are going to use the ground measurement from the wired sensor networks, which consists of many sensor nodes. As an example, on the left, you can see the photo of one sensor node standing on the snow. So I divided my talk into four topics. First, I want to introduce you the wireless sensor networks and their measurement. Second, about the method to determine the transit elevation in the mountain basins. And third, to discuss the evolution and the uncertainty of the transit elevation during storm events. And four, specifically, I will talk about the transit elevation during the critical atmospheric river events. So first comes the wireless sensor networks. The left map shows the red areas is the Feather River on the top and the American River on the bottom. So each green circle means one sensor cluster. So in total, we have four clusters in the Feather River and 13 clusters in the American River. They were deployed above the snow line in the upper basin. Note that within each cluster, we have 10 to 12 sensor nodes distributed in 1 square kilometer. So they can overall, we have over 170 sensor nodes in the two basins. So they can provide important hydrological measurement in the headwater region. So if we zoom into one sensor cluster, we can get its architecture here. On the lower left photo, it shows one sensor node. On the left end of the horizontal bar, it is the snow depth looking downwards. The middle one, the white shield, is the combined temperature and the relative humidity sensor. So above the sonar panel, there is an antenna mounting on the top. So this antenna connect this sensor node to the base station in the middle one. If long distance between the sensor node and the base station present, a repeater is added to bridge this sensor node to the base station. So the base station records all the sensor data at 15 minutes interval for all the sensor nodes. This data can be accessed in near real time through the internet or can be downloaded through the field visits. Finally, the data are stored in a database and processed after that. We can have a look at the fine resolution data. For example, the snow depth, which is an important variable. The left figure plots the snow depth over time. The upper one shows each color line means the mean snow depth within a cluster in the American River. So there's 13 clusters distributed in different elevation, ranging from 1,500 meters to 2,700 meters. So you can see strong heterogeneity of the snow depths. However, if we zoom into the 10 clusters within a cluster, 10 sensor nodes within a cluster, you can see the figure on the bottom. You can still see the large differences of the snow depths. That's because besides elevation, other factor accounts, such as the canopy cover, slope, and the aspect. So with that, you have a good understanding of the wireless sensor networks. We can now move on to see how to determine the transit elevation using the ground measurement. First is the transit elevation. Here we can see the blue dashed line shows the surface elevation versus its covered areas in the Feather River. For example, during a storm events at a certain time, the rain snow transit elevation can be about 1,800 meters. We can get this red line. So below the transit elevation, the grounds get green, so contribute to the runoff. Above it, usually the ground get snow and stored at snowpack. At this case, we can get the map of the contribution areas shown as the purple areas. And these areas accounts for around 74% of the whole basin. Say for another case, at a certain time, we can get the transit elevation at 1,500 meters. you can see the runoff contribution areas purple zone reduced to only 38% of the basin. So this means a 300 higher transient elevation can double the contribution areas, which will significantly affect the prediction of the runoff. Currently, we have the operational radar at the lower basin to determine the atmospheric snow level, which is important information. This can be used to infer the underground transient elevation. For example, in the Feather River, the lower left map shows the radar observed the atmospheric snow level at the Oroville Dam. The middle photo shows the radar looking upwards. Basically, it's based on the reflectivities of the precipitation. So on the right is the real-time data downloaded from NOAA. The black dots is the radar snow level changing a long time for these 2 days, so they can provide important information. So moving next, we want to use our ground data to infer the underground transient elevation. Here, we can choose a temperature-based method. We use the wet bulb temperature because it can be calculated using the air temperature and the relative humidity. Including the relative humidity could improve the prediction of the precipitation phase. So on the left figure, you can see using this hourly data, blue dots means the weather sensor data. It plots the elevation versus their wet bulb temperature. So we can easily build a linear regression between them, shown as the red line. The shaded zone is the 95% confidence interval. Say, if we set a temperature threshold as 0.5 degrees C, you can easily get the transient elevation at a certain time. This means the ground will get rain below and the snow above. So here we have a question. How do we select the temperature threshold? For example, in this 3 day, even 3 days, in these 3 days, the upgoing curve shows the elevations using different threshold. You can see the 0.5 degrees C threshold difference corresponds to around 100 meters transient elevation differences. You can see them on using the upgoing curves. Remember that we have lots of sensor nodes in between the two horizontal lines. So we can use the snow depth changes observed from the sensor to infer the underground transient elevation. For example, in the bottom figure, each color line is the snow depth changes at the daily timestamp for the sensors. The blue means increased snow depth at that day, and the red for decreased snow depth. So in the middle day, we can see a clear elevational pattern of the snow depth changes. The black line can be derived based on the snow depth changes, which is the underground transient elevation. Above the black dashed line, the ground gets increased snow depth because the ground gets snow. And above it, ground sensors record decreased snow depth because of rain on snow yearly. So this ground truth from the snow depth can help us to select the temperature threshold. So we can see this table. It shows different threshold results from them compared to the ground truth. We select a threshold from -1 to 1.5 at the 0.5 degree interval. Here we see the 0.5 degree C has the best matchment agreement compared to the ground truth with mean differences around 21 meters. So we select this one as the temperature threshold for the transient elevation in our study. This threshold is also selected by other studies based on the precipitation type of observation. So moving next, we are going to see some results to see the evolution and uncertainty of the transient elevation during storm events. For example, we can take this atmospheric river event. As see the top panel, it plots the transient elevation over this 6 day event. The red line shows the temperature based results, and the shaded zone is the confidence interval. The radar data is plotted as the rain dots. So you can see they both show a similar evolution. In the first 2 days, the transient elevation is around 1500 meters, but in the middle 2 days, the transient elevation got elevated. That's because of the atmospheric river landfalling. We can get it from the middle panel. The gauge recorded high precipitation in the middle 2 days. Looking at the bottom figure, it shows the stone depth changes at each sensor node. On the third day, all the sensors get increased their color by the blue. That's because of the low snow level transition elevation. However, on the fourth day, the radar and the ground temperature-based transition elevation shows the higher transition. We also get the pattern from the snow depths, so we can have this black dashed line, the ground truth. Above it, the ground gets snow and have the increased snow depths colored by blue. However, below it, we have the decreased snow depths. That's because of the rain on snow. We can also compare our temperature-based results to the radar snow level throughout all the data, all the years data. For example, for the American River on the top, it is 4 years data during the winter time. The x-axis shows the temperature-based results, and the y-axis shows the radar-based results. The color of the point means the density. So more red means more data there. So the data are quite scattered along the one-to-one line. They show good agreement, but in sometimes they show quite a large difference. The best regression line of between them is the red line. It's above the one-to-one line and has a slope larger than one. So this indicates the radar snow level tends to be higher than the ground transition elevation. Using 2 year data from the Feather River on the bottom, we can have a similar pattern. So the reason for the radar snow level tends to be higher than the ground transition elevation, it can be described by the snow level lowering or snow level bending, as Peter discussed in this morning. On the right, a conceptual figure, you can see the radar observed the atmospheric snow level at the lower part of the basin. However, due to the orographic lifting of the AMS, such as the adiabatic and the latent cooling of the rising air, the snow level goes lower. This makes the ground transit elevation in the upper basin tends to be lower than the radar snow level in the lower part of the basin. So next we can compare the transit elevation between the two basins. On the left, we show the scatter plot of the temperature-based results. The x-axis is the American River, y-axis is the Feather River. So the best regression line is the red line, is below the one-to-one line. This indicates the American River tends to have a higher transit elevation than the Feather. Using the radar data on the right figure, it shows a similar pattern. The reason for that is that the Feather is about 1 degree latitude farther north than the American River. So the air tends to be cooler, and thus the transit elevation tends to be lower. In terms of the uncertainty of the transition estimation, we can plot the width of the confidence interval. You can see them on the left figure. The red line is that for the American River, and the blue line is that for the Feather River. The shaded zones are the one standard deviation away their means. So we can say the Feather has a larger, wider shaded zone, meaning it has larger uncertainty. One reason is that we only have 4 clusters in the Feather, but which are much fewer than the 13 clusters in America. Another important factor is that a complex terrain in the Feather plays a role. On the right, you see it's the 30-year normal annual precipitation. The blue means more precipitation and red for less. So on the top, the Feather River on the western side is the wind side, so it gets much more precipitation than the eastern rain shadow areas. Note that we have 2 clusters out of the 4 clusters are located in the eastern rain shadow area, so this contributes more uncertainty in the Feather River. So next, we want to know, does a similar transit elevation have the same implications for the two basins? Because we know the elevational characteristics of the two basins are different. Let's see this map. Let's see the figure on the left. The black line is the transit elevation probability density in water year 2017. The green zone means in that year, the transit elevation offer covers 1,300 meters to 2,200 meters. The red line shows the surface elevation for the American River, and the blue shows that for the American for the Federal River. I'm sorry. So the gray zone covers almost 80% of the Federal River, but only 40% of the American River. This indicates substantially larger areas in the Federal River is covered by the red zone, meaning lots of areas can get rain and snow. This may make the Federal River more vulnerable to rising of the transient elevation. So moving next, we are going to see the transient elevation during the critical atmospheric river events. As we all know, the atmospheric river AR is a long and narrow corridor of the concentrated moisture. You can see, you see this kind of map today a lot of time. So among the 68 winter storm events we studied on the right, we can classify them as AR events and non-AR events. The red bar plot meaning the AR events, so we can see the AR events account for more than half of all the precipitation events during winters. So it's important to know how this transient elevation differs between these two kinds of events. On the top figure, we can plot the box plot of the transient elevation based on temperature for red AR events and blue non-AR events. The triangle inside the box, meaning the average. So we can clearly see the AR events tend to have a higher transient elevation than non-AR events. That's obvious because we know the warm air associated with AR. However, let's zoom into the bottom figure. It shows the difference between the radar snow level and the temperature-based ground transient elevation. For both AR events and the non-AR events, the triangle, the mean value tends to be positive, indicating the snow level lowering or bending. However, you may also notice that large difference is shown during AR events. This suggested that enhanced snow level lowering, probably due to the warmer temperature and more moisture during AR. It's good to know that because AR brings us intense precipitation. Moving next, we can have a simple calculation to see how a different transient elevation estimate impact our potential rainfall estimates. Let's take an example from the Federal River on January 10. It's an AR event. The purple line shows the precipitation along elevation, and the green dashed line is the surface areas versus the elevation of the Federal River. On that day, the temperature-based results is around 200 meters below the radar snow level. So if we do a simple calculation, to calculate the potential rainfall using the rain amount times the areas of the rain zone, we can get the potential rainfall along elevation bins. So on the bottom figure, you see the temperature-based results is shown as the black line, and radar data based results is shown as the red dashed line. The differences of the potential rainfall is shown as the gray zone. It can be around 50 million cubic meters. That's around 30% of the potential rainfall. So the transient elevation estimate during AR is very critical to the flood forecasting. And that brings me to my end of my presentation. So I will summarize what I talk about. First, the basin scale wireless sensor networks can provide temperature-based transient elevation. And also, we can provide snow depth-based ground truth. Second, the ground transient elevation from our temperature measures show a difference to a radar snow level because they are located in the lower part of the elevation. And third, to compare between the AR events and non-AR events, the transient elevation tends to be higher during AR events. However, in the meantime, the difference between ground and atmospheric transitions is also larger during AR events. And fourth, the methods we demonstrate here for using our wireless sensor network can be extended to provide near real-time information on the transient elevation, which can be as a complement to the radar snow level data. This is what we are going to do next. So on my last slide, I would like to acknowledge my collaborators from UC Merced, Berkeley Davis, and DWR. Research fundings from NSF, UC Water, and California Energy Commission are also acknowledged. Thank you very much for your attention. With that, I can take any questions.
All right. Thank you, Guo Tao. We are amazingly running about 15 minutes ahead of schedule right now, so we have plenty of time for questions. So please send in your questions via the chat box. I had a comment, which was just that towards the end there, you showed that during atmospheric river events, the rain snow transition level was higher than in non-AR events, and that seemed to match really nicely with the results that Mike Dettinger showed this morning, which showed that AR events tend to be warmer than non-AR events,
That's right. This is a good point, because we are using the underground measurement. This is proved that concept in another way. I think it's a good point. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. All right. So, someone's requesting that you show the conclusion slide again. So if you could just change back to that. And then there's another question. Did you happen to look at the implications of warm atmospheric rivers to snowfall on the Eastern Sierra, Mono Lake and Owens Valley watersheds, which is at high elevation? Does it receive more snow?
Currently, I do this comparison only based on the two basins in the northern part and the western sides. I didn't do anything on the other sides. Maybe I should have a try. Currently, I don't have an exact answer for that.
Okay, fair enough. Bruce McGurk asks, once you find the delta between radar and the network temperature, do you need to keep operating the network?
Yes, of course, we need the radar network. And because they are measuring two different things, one from the atmospheric snow level, it's on the lower part of the basin, it can provide near real time. However, in our part, the ground measurement is for the upper part of the basin. Although they show some differences, they are quite independent and can be evaluated at different ways. Yeah, that's my answer.
Okay. So we'll wait a few minutes or a minute or two to see if other questions come in. So if you have questions, please send them. I guess another question I had was, you spent your time talking about the rain snow transition elevation, but presumably from your network you can get a profile, like a vertical profile of temperature up the mountain slope. Is that correct?
Yes. It's just a linear regression like this.
And so I guess, have you been thinking about other uses for your network other than looking at this transition elevation?
Yeah, we have some efforts to try to estimate the precipitation using the snow depth measurement. We know that precipitation in the higher elevation, your suffers the wind-induced blowing up. So we want to use the ground measurement from snow or sleet to estimate the precipitation. That's another part of the job. Also, because we have lots of sensors distributed across the basin, we may also want to generate a snow map for real time, if possible. That's our future research.
Future work. And then, so now we have a request to show your cover slide again.
The first one?
I think that's right.